Our next guest was drafted in 2000,
oh, well,
6 years after you were. So, you know, you're kind of like the bully. And who, by the way, showed me the video of this proclaimed errant elbow that you used. And it turns out it really wasn't one. Did he send you the video?
Oh, I saw the video. And it just, I didn't want to, I couldn't believe I had to relive that again. I didn't sleep that night, just so you guys know.
Brian Sotheby joins us. Suds, how you doing?
Good, boys. How are you?
Good. I did laugh when I saw the video because I was like, wow, that was nothing. Like, I was expecting at least like a little bit of an elbow. But there were, I didn't even know if you guys made contact with each other.
Bad camera angle.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping there was even a little bit better replay of it, but if it makes you feel better, I went after an 18 or 19 year old Nathan Horton too. So,
hey, if you're on the ice, you got to go for it.
Oh, like, I totally agree. Why not?
I think he used the same line on me.
You're in Anaheim right now. How does the Ryan Kesler trade? Are Duck fans pumped about this?
Yeah. For the most part, it's a big move for them, and it seems like the buzz around here is some excitement. You know, obviously for me as a guy that played against him, I couldn't stand the guy as a guy to play against, but it's out of respect, I guess, for the type of player that he is. And I think the Ducks, they sent some good pieces to Vancouver. I don't think Vancouver made out as bad as maybe some people think, but I still think I've heard a few people saying that Kessler's on the decline or not the player that he once was. But for me, I still think that he can be that player. He's a dominant guy. He's a big body that can skate, and he plays a heavy sort of agitating game and a two-way style that you definitely need to win in the West. And I think one of the things that a lot of people are forgetting is that the entire Vancouver Canucks team has had trouble scoring the last 2 years. And then last year he's playing for a coach that's all about defense. And now he's going to a team that opens it up. Bruce Boudreau is one of the guys that likes to play a more open style, offensive minded game. And I think you're going to see a rejuvenated guy after getting traded and a guy that's probably going to have some better numbers ahead, I think.
You look at this trade, obviously, it's to compete with the LA Kings. I mean, they got depth down the middle. Saku Koivu, God, you love him, but he's getting older. So he's your second-line center, Kesler. Who are his lineies? Is it Maroon, Devontae Smith-Pelly? Is there somebody
Emerson
else?
Edom, I think.
Edom?
Yeah, you're obviously going to have some young guys to step up, no question. And I think you saw a few guys in the playoffs last year that you just mentioned that can do that. And you know, he does so much more than just offense too. I mean, a lot of people again are talking that maybe he's in decline, but if you can give me a guy that plays a two-way big power game like he does, that has 50 points a year and kills penalties and takes faceoffs and plays the hard minutes, he's going to open up space for Getzlaff and Perry and those guys. He's a guy that can play the power play and contribute with those guys. But no question there's going to be some holes they have to fill, and I think this team has to fill a hole or two on the back end too to really compete with LA. But I feel like this is a bigger step for them to compete with those teams and push and try to get out of the West.
Right now, interesting, the new report is that Vancouver's offered, according to Darren Dreger, the number 6, the number 24, and their number 24 from last year for the number 1.
Yeah.
Wow.
Would you make that trade if you're Florida?
Oh, boy. Who'd they take? Was that Horvat last year?
Sinkarik.
No, Sinkarik, who was injured this year. I think it was a back surgery or shoulder surgery, one of the two.
Wow.
He only played half a year.
Boy, that's it'd be tough to be Dale Talon right now. I mean, I think for me, if I was Talon, I like all those picks, but if I was going to do it, I think I'd like a more established player to come along with that, or maybe X out one of those picks and take a guy that's already in the league and established. But that's still a pretty significant offer. And ultimately, I think for the Oilers, depending on what they want to do or where they want to go, having a team like Vancouver move up, if the rumors are true that maybe they're looking at a Reinhardt or a forward, that might be a way, probably the only way that they'll end up with a guy like Ekblad, if that's what they want. I know that's where I think they should go if he's there, but Boy, that's a heck of an offer.
It's a lot to give up. There's no doubt about it. But yeah. So why would you think that Ekblad would be the if the Oilers are picking first? Why would you take Ekblad for the Oilers?
For me, I just think you got to build from the back end. I've seen a lot of hockey over the years, and I think ultimately you can win hockey games with mediocre forwards and a great back end. If you're solid in your own end, you're solid with a goaltender, it may not be the hockey that people want to see, defensive-minded and whatnot, but having good defensemen, moving the puck, getting the puck out of your zone, spending less time. Look at the 06 Oilers team. Pronger's obviously a guy that doesn't come around all the time, but they didn't have a team that was just filled with talent up front and a ton of superstars. It was a team that had a great guy on the back end that made the whole back end better. He ate minutes, and it really made them a much better team. And the teams that have won over the last 10, 20 years have been teams with good blue lines, great players, and solid blue lines. And I think you can win more in this league with mediocre forwards and a great back end than some stud forwards, and you can't keep the puck out of your net.
But you got to put the puck in the net at some point. You're right.
Absolutely.
Like realistically, now I don't think you can win unless you have both. That's just the harsh reality.
Yeah. Right. When you look at Chicago and St. Louis and L.A. and the teams that are the best teams in the league, that's just it. You have to have both. You have to have one or two guys on your back end that are studs or just about studs, and the same goes up front. You got to have 3, 4, 5 guys that are big time hockey players, and you got to draft well and build your depth well throughout.
Yeah, I feel very much that'd be the right pick for Oilers. And we talked about before, Gregor and I, there's no guarantee about Marinson, there's no guarantee about Klefbom or even Nurse. You got to get these guys up there, and you got to get them a deep group, and that you can trade those guys if you need other pieces. Sotheby, take me back. It's been a few years since you were drafted, but you were a high draft pick. Some would say not high enough. And I'm wondering, what are these guys feeling right now? What are we 40-30 minutes away from the draft starting?
Yeah.
You were there. What's it like to be sitting in the stands with your best suit from Tip Top waiting to be called?
Tip Top. I think mine was Moore's back then.
Moore's suit people.
Tie, like $99, terrible combo, terrible haircut.
I love it.
Thought I looked amazing. It's crazy. The emotions for me, you're replaying everything the night before of all the teams that you've talked to. You've had your meetings. You've had your physicals. A lot of the top guys fly in 4 or 5 days before, and you have all these other meetings right leading up to the draft, sometimes even more testing. And I remember the night before lying in bed just staring at the ceiling and not getting much sleep, being anxious, being nervous, wondering where you're going to go. And for me, the whole draft process I didn't really know where I was going to go. I met with Chicago. They had, I think, 3 picks that year, and their first pick started at 10. And I was ranked probably, I think I ended up going, I went 26, and I went right around where I think Bob McKenzie had me. But
okay.
I was almost thinking, because I'd met with Chicago so many times, that I'm like, geez, am I going to end up going anywhere from 10 here? So about 10, I started really getting anxious and thinking, boy, this might be where I could end up, and kept falling. And then I remember Nathan Smith. I was the second-ranked player out of the Western Hockey League that year behind Scott Hartnell, and Vancouver selected Nathan Smith at 23, and I almost stood up when they announced from the Western Hockey League, and so that was tough. But it was just by the time it's over, it's almost a relief. I think when you are slated to go a little higher, and it's almost inevitable that you're going to get picked, for me it was just a relief. I went home that day and crashed for about 3 hours after the draft, had a nap. So it was a real relief for sure. Got my rest, and then obviously It was in Calgary, so we might have went out to Cowboys for the rest of the night.
I'm not familiar with that establishment. You'll have to tell me about it sometime.
About that place.
Now, stats, you know what? There's some things you can't tell about a player. I mean, stats and now the use of these advanced stats seems like it's very popular, mm-hmm. and then people are getting an idea. What is your gut feeling when it comes to character of a player? Is that something you'd be interested in if you were a general manager or a scout?
Oh, that would be what I'd be trying to dig out of those interviews all day long. I think when I watch a player, I want to see, you know, I want to see him in playoff type games. I want to see him in games where it matters. I want to see him late in games, in those crucial moments. I want to know what he's like off the ice. I want to know if he's a quiet guy, if he's a loud guy, if he's phony. And I think you can take a lot from those interviews. You got to push the right buttons. You got to ask the right questions, or you'll probably end up with just sort of a generic answer. But I think, absolutely, you have to dive in and really find out what kind of player you have. And you can tell when you're building your team, if you're talking to a guy that doesn't say very much, or he's quiet, or he's afraid with his answers and whatnot, that can certainly turn teams off. And you see other guys that have this confidence that sort of exudes them. And most of the best players in the league have a confidence and swagger about them.
I'm not sure if you guys, either one of you, read the article that Steve Simmons had on Ho Sang, who, of course, very skilled player. A lot of people say maybe the most skilled guy in the Ontario Hockey League, but, you know, had some discipline issues and everything like that. You know, he's Jamaican, and people wonder if that's a fact. His own GM said when he dangles, he's like, well, this isn't the Harlem Globetrotters, right? Which he wouldn't say that to a white kid, let's be honest. So, you know, how much of that plays into a factor? And do you think there's going to be a lot of teams missing the boat on this kid because there's still a stigma in a white GM world about a black kid?
Well, I didn't see that article, and I can say that I don't know too much about that kid. For me, I know a lot about the top 10 and done a lot of reading. But yeah, I mean, I think all that stuff comes into play, unfortunately. And I think teams do their research and want to know what you're like on and off the ice. And, you know, ultimately this kid, if that's the case, he's going to end up going to a team that really wants him and believes in him, and hopefully it turns out to be a great player.
Yeah, listen, I'm concerned about that. I'm a very team first orientated guy. I want my players to buy into the team first. I want them to be confident, but I don't like guys that are brash. Like, for instance, a guy who everyone's talked about lately, Johnny Manziel. I don't want that guy. If I was a general manager of an NFL team, I would not have brought Johnny Manziel into my fold. Many general managers, many coaches said as much before the draft and obviously after the draft, and they didn't take him. So I want guys that are focused and are not going to try to be above the team. I played with a guy who was above the team in his mind, which is Sean Avery. And when he was inside the team and he kind of toned it down, he was effective. As soon as he got out, he started being bigger than the team in his mind, he blew it away and he was ineffective. And he actually is a distraction to the team. So I'm not about that. I'm traditional. I guess a lot of people say I'm traditional or whatever you want to call it, but I believe in guys that are team first.
Well, I'm 100% the same way. I think that's where in those interviews and doing your discussions and when you're talking to all kinds of people around the game that are surrounding a player. I mean, scouts go so in depth with who they talk to, and you got to ask those questions. You got to find out a lot about the player. And there's a difference between being a guy that's confident and a leader and a guy that's all about himself or going over and above and going to put himself ahead of the team. And, you know, having played, obviously, Struds, you know exactly what it's like to be on the team. And it's not fun to be around guys like that only care about themselves and are looking for the limelight and all the attention themselves. It's about building a chemistry within the room and guys that want to pull with one another, and guys that try to stand out or put themselves above the team. It may appear a certain way to fans. It may appear a certain way to people that aren't in the room, but the guys that are in the room know it and don't overly appreciate it, and it hurts your overall product on the ice.
Yeah, you know, you can look at the LA Kings. You know, that team, they're playing for each other, and I can't quantify that. I can't put a stat on it other than Stanley Cup winners. That's how I quantify it. They're playing for each other. I mean, you see the guy, Martinez, scores the game-winning goal. He's just looking for someone to hug. You know, then after that interview, he says, you know what, was it Toffoli or Pearson, whoever, who made a great shot, and I was just the lucky guy to tap it in. I mean, that is what you want to see, and he was genuine. You could see he was just happy that, you know, Toffoli got that first shot a long time and created the, you know, the shot that led to the game-winning goal. Like, that is, that resonates within that dressing room and builds excitement for the team. And if I'm the Oilers today, I guess this is where I'm kind of heading, where I want to bring this back. I recognize they want skill, but the Oilers seemed like every offseason, there's, you know, the experts, the fans, everyone are saying the Oilers need more character in that dressing room. So why not go and chase it down through the draft? You might be sacrificing a little bit of skill at times, but you're going to bring guys in that push that, that character and that, and I can't quantify it. So don't ask me to say it's this or that. I mean, you could say maybe shot blocking or whatever, but when you're in that dressing room and you see guys that are like that are team guys, and I'm not talking about fourth liners, I'm talking about second, third, top line guys that play for each other, that is so important. And I hope the Oilers go out today and seek that out.
Well, and that's part of the reason why I think I would go after a guy like Ekblad. He seems to have that pedigree. He seems to be that type of guy. He's a captain on his team. He's a young guy. He seems to be confident. He seems to be a leader. And again, having not talked to him myself or been around him, I don't know exactly what he's like. But and that's where I guess I struggle a little bit with how this all has unfolded. With the Oilers as well. I mean, everyone talks Dreisaitl, Dreisaitl, Dreisaitl. And for me, the things that I hear about a kid like Sam Bennett, I love. It's just a matter of, is he big enough? Is his build, can he handle the guys? I mean, Anaheim now, Kessler didn't leave the West. They're just getting stronger teams. And unfortunately, they need a little bit more size and guys that can play a heavier game, even though Dreisaitl maybe is not going to play a heavy game. But if he can be 210, 220, that's going to have a bigger impact than say, a guy like Bennett right now with the team they have. I mean, if they didn't have Nugent Hopkins down the middle right now at his size, I'd take Bennett all day from just the things that I hear about him and his competitiveness and just the way he doesn't quit and compete. And honestly, if they took Bennett right now, I'd be ecstatic for them based on all the things I've heard as well.
Well, it'll be interesting. Who do you think the Oilers take, Suds?
I think if Ekblad's there, I have a hard time believing they're going to pass on Ekblad. So it'll be interesting to see. It sounds like if Florida picks, that's who they'll take. So unless a trade happens here in the next little bit, I would imagine he won't be there. And I think they'll go with Dreisaitl. It just sounds like from everything that's out and about, and there's probably some truth to the rumors that they'll go Dreisaitl.
Have a good one in Anaheim. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. Take care.